You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
From the moment they landed in Afghanistan, they began adapting to the circumstances on the ground. They sported beards and traditional scarves. They rode horses that had been trained to run into machine gun fire atop saddles that had been fashioned from wood and saddlebags that had been crafted from Afghan carpets. They used pack mules to transport equipment along some of the roughest terrain in the world, riding at night, in darkness, often near minefields. That's a quote from a speech in 2002 by then U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. He was talking about U.S. Special Forces soldiers on a clandestine mission to wage high-tech warfare alongside Afghan allies who, quote, literally came riding out of the smoke to come down on their Taliban enemy. Rumsfeld wanted to transform the U.S. military, and the U.S. Special Forces grew significantly under his watch. They now operate in 60 countries around the world, and the Obama administration plans to double that to 120. Con Hallinan writes for Foreign Policy in Focus, and in a recent article, he wrote about the dramatic growth of what he terms shadow warriors. He joins me on the phone now. Good morning, Con.
Good morning.
Now, the quote I just read presents these kinds of forces as kind of mythic, and I want to ask you about that in a moment, but myths aside, what are special operations forces?
Well, special operations forces are each of the branches of the military has its own special operations force. So the Army has like the Green Berets, and the Navy has the SEALs, and the Air Force has Blue Light and Delta. And then there are as well, Marines also have a special operations forces. As well as that, besides these kind of elite sort of units, then there are a whole series of sort of what you call second-grade special operation forces, and they come in on things like engineering and electronics and backup and that thing. And there's been a stunning explosion of special forces, and it's now the largest growth section of the military budget. And I would want to say one thing. What Rumsfeld didn't mention when he talked about those horses and wooden saddles was that those horses and wooden saddles were backed up by A-10 ground support airplanes and F-16s and F-18s. So, you know, this idea of this mythic, to use the term, that sort of make them a combination of, I don't know, Yoda and Zen masters. And most of the stuff that I read on the special forces, these are pretty much testosterone, charged young men who play more video games than they read Socrates and Plato.
Right, and you write about that a bit in your article, that it's sort of this mythic kind of creation in mass media and popular culture. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, the thing about the special forces is that traditionally the military has kind of not look with great favor on special forces because they're very expensive. They do require a lot of extra training. They involve a lot of special equipment, and they also tend to be what they call off the reservation, which is a terrible term, and gives you an idea of what they're talking about. That is, these special forces, they kind of do their own thing. They carry out a lot of these nighttime raids that are happening in Iraq and Afghanistan. They were on the ground in Libya, they're on the ground in Somalia, they're on the ground in Yemen, etc. And they're kind of out of the chain of command. So there's a nervousness in the regular military about them because they're sort of loose cannons, and they can get you in trouble.
Now, the U.S., they've waged clandestine warfare in order to achieve its aims for a long time, and this seems a little different, and they're now operating in 60 countries, which seems quite a bit. What exactly do they do in all these countries?
Well, a lot of it is training. So they have, for instance, in Africa, they have what they call the Trans-Sahel Counter-Terror Initiative. And this was set up under the Bush administration in 2005. And what they do is that they train a lot of the troop of the armies that surround the area of the Sahara. So a lot of it is training. A lot of it is sort of search and destroy. You know, they're looking for terrorists. I mean, you know, Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda-affiliated organizations, which I have no idea what that means. But so they're doing that kind of stuff. And we don't know exactly what they're doing. I mean, that part, in some ways, that's the major problem here. The thing about a military under our Constitution is that a military is under the command of the civilians. And what's happened over the years is that civilians have gotten further and further away from being able to control their own military. Well, if you have a lot of these special forces, by definition, I call these people shadow warriors because they literally work in the shadows. You don't know what they're doing. They keep themselves clandestine. That's how they operate. Well, it means that basically there's very little control over them. Civilians have very little control of them. Not even the Congress has very much control of them. I'm not even sure that the intelligence committees in the Senate and the House really know what these special forces are doing. So what you've got here is essentially clandestine warfare being carried out, of which most of the American people are completely unaware of. I mean, if you said that figure, you said 60 countries, by 2015 it would be something like 120 countries. So, but what do we know about them? We don't know anything about them. And so as far as the kind of threat to democracy, we have to take this very seriously.
And one of the things you also talk about in the article is the sort of crossover between people in civilian institutions and military institutions, sort of crossing over between special forces units and into the hierarchy.
Right. There's a couple of ways. First of all, you have General Petraeus, who was the commander in Afghanistan. And is now the head of the Central Intelligence Agency. So you've got a former general, number one general kind of guy, who's now running a civilian agency. You have Panetta, who's the former leader of the CIA, head of the CIA, is now heading up the Defense Department. So you're beginning to get this kind of blurring between these two things. And there are a couple of problems with this. For instance, the Central Intelligence Agency is running the drone war in Pakistan and in Yemen and Somalia. Now, according to the Geneva conventions, civilians cannot engage in warfare. And there's a reason for that, because the Geneva conventions protect civilians. Well, except, of course, if civilians are engaging in warfare. And then if civilians are engaging in warfare, they're legitimate targets. So there are very, very strict rules about the fact that civilians cannot engage in warfare activities. And yet, essentially, the Central Intelligence Agency, which is an entirely civilian operation, is running three separate wars. The other side of what's happening, too, is besides this kind of blurring between military and the civilian, special forces commanders are moving up into the regular command of the army, so that the former head, one of the former commanders of the SEAL forces, and the SEAL forces were the forces that assassinated Osama bin Laden, one of the former commanders of the SEAL forces is in charge of what they call Southern Command. Southern Command covers Latin America and Caribbean. And one of the former SEAL commanders is second in charge of Central Command, which covers the Middle East and Central Asia. These guys are used to operating under the radar. They're used to operating in the shadows. And there's a lot of nervousness, particularly in Latin America, with the long history that we've had of doing things like supporting coups and all that kind of thing, that you suddenly have one of these shadow warriors who's second in charge of Southern Command. And most people don't know that, and they don't know what the meaning of that is. But people in Latin America certainly know what it means.
In the speech I quoted at the beginning, one of the things Donald Rumsfeld said was that part of his role as Secretary of Defense was to ask the question, what design would I be forming if I were the enemy, and then fashioning our forces as necessary to deter and defeat those threats? And I'm kind of wondering, who is the enemy and what are the threats that he would be talking about?
Well, mainly what they're talking about is there has been a sea change. This growth of the special forces is really part of a sea change in U.S. diplomacy and military policy. And we're moving away. We don't want to get involved in a war like Afghanistan or Iraq again. These are terribly unpopular wars. Afghanistan's costing about $10 billion a month at this point. The special operations that were used in the Libyan War and the American support of the revolutionaries in Libya is probably going to come out to be about $1 billion for, what, almost 6 months of war. So it's war on the cheap. It's war that you can fight off of the radar screen without very much in the way of oversight. And I think that's the direction that we're moving. Now, that said, again, you know, here's Rumsfeld talking about going to meet the enemy. Well, that's really worked well in Afghanistan, hasn't it? Last month, we lost more soldiers than any time in the last 10 years of the war. The situation in Afghanistan is more unstable now than it was in 2002. So, you know, this whole idea that creating these special forces and that they're going to win the wars for you. In fact, what they do is the opposite. One of the things that Afghans are terribly upset about, and which the Karzai government has continually railed against, are these night raids where all of a sudden these special forces show up at 2 o'clock in the morning and they kick down a door and they arrest some people or they shoot some people or anything like that. And it causes, outrage in the Afghan population. The same is also true in Iraq. So that these special forces not only don't win the war for you, what they end up doing is they end up alienating the civilian population, very much like drone war has done in Pakistan. So one of the things you got to do is you got to step outside of the rhetoric and step outside of the kind of mythology here, you know, Zen master stuff, and look at what's really going on. I mean, the fact of the matter is Afghanistan is a complete disaster. And what we have to do is find some way to get out of there as quickly as possible, because that war is long lost, and in large part because we certainly rely now to a good extent on these special forces and relied on them to begin with.
At the end of your article, you quote Admiral Eric Olsona saying that operating in 120 countries depends on our ability not to talk about it, and he wanted to get back in the shadows. What are the prospects for drawing them out of the shadows, so to speak?
Well, that's going to be tricky, and I wish I had a neat little formula for doing that. I mean, one of the things that we have never been able to do in the United States is to have a sensible discussion on military policy and the military budget. I mean, it's kind of the sacred cow. People just don't talk about cutting the military budget, and they don't talk about what the military is doing. I mean, all they do is they say, we celebrate the veterans. Well, we celebrate them 2 days a year. The rest of the time, we basically deny them benefits, give them inadequate health care, don't pay a whole lot of attention to them whatsoever. But, you know, for those 2 days, they get celebrated. You know, trying to get a hold of this, trying to get a handle around this, is not going to be easy. Now, it can be done. During the 1970s, there was a senator by the name of Frank Church who held a series of hearings on the Central Intelligence Agency, which washed over into Special Forces as well. And what came out of those hearings were a series of restrictions on what it is that CIA could do, what it is that these clandestine forces could do. And a lot of those restrictions now have been either ignored or formally dismantled. I think we have to get back to that, but getting people to focus on that is just really, really hard. It's not on their radar screen. It's sort of like the special forces. It's off people's radar screens, you know. They're not thinking about this. They're thinking about, you know, the 15% unemployment. They're thinking about the collapsing economy. They're thinking about, you know, their mortgages. They're thinking about collapse of education, school systems, et cetera. And they're not thinking this way. In the meantime, these shadow warriors are growing enormously, and they're getting us involved in lots of places that if American people knew about, they might have some serious reservations.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining me this morning, Con.
Well, thanks for having me. Anytime.
Con Hallinan taught journalism for many years at the University of California, Santa Cruz. He writes regularly for Foreign Policy in Focus, and you can read much of his writing by visiting his weblog at dispatchesfromtheedge.wordpress.com.